Hello, welcome to the Adam Fitch podcast. I'm your host, Adam Fitch. You should know that by the name of the podcast and the fact that this is, I think, the 19th episode now. I could be completely wrong on that and look a div, but I think it's the 19th, which means I'm almost at 20, which means I've almost been doing this for 5 months, which is, it's gone really fast, and I don't know if I've got better at all, but I like having conversations with people and just bringing a level of access that we don't normally get to people behind the scenes. And sticking with the theme of the podcast, I'm trying to attack a different sector of the industry in each one. And today I'm joined by Kevin Burke, who is a master of all things video, as per my understanding, though we will get into that. So thank you for joining me today, Kevin. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Adam. Thanks for having me.
So, right. I've had journalists on here. I've had people from the sponsorship side of things. But what I've discovered is I really like it and find it insightful when people kind of label themselves or how they see themselves. So I see myself as like a journalist over a content creator, but now I'm doing so much editing work, I barely see myself as a journalist anymore, which is actually really depressing now that I think about it. And I'd not had that thought until now, so I might cry during this. But like, yeah, so what would you say you do, and how do you label yourself and see yourself?
These days I'd probably label myself as a content director.
Okay.
Simply because, you know, I've spent a few years in different sectors, in and out of the marketing world, some documentary films, motion graphics work on indie films, and it all kind of culminated together in more of a leadership capacity more recently, where it just allows me to kind of breathe creatively and direct creative teams on producing content.
Okay, and some people, When they think of someone being a director, it's someone there sat in a chair saying, yeah, cut. Okay, let's go back to the beginning. Let's do that again. Like, what actually is like directing for the people who think it's that simplistic and are very reductive in thinking?
Well, I mean, some of it can be, those components are definitely a part of it. But in a lot of cases, it would involve talking with the producers, or in the case of our work with Ultra, talking to the higher up or the marketing team about, what the delivery is, what needs to be done, what needs to be said, and then taking that away and kind of coming up with a creative vision in order to execute that. So in our case, I mean, I have a background in stand-up comedy, and I've always leaned more into the comedic. So it was a very, very good fit at Ultra. Mm-hmm. The team that I worked with there was absolutely fantastic at what they do. And if I can plug them, that's Nicholas Houghton, who was our primary editor. Mike Onley, who was our cinematographer, one of the best I've ever worked with. And Daniel Carranza, who's our COD expert and both videographer and an editor as well. But those guys really, really killed it. And my capacity as director would be to say, hey, here's what we're going to shoot today. Here's an idea. This is why I think it'll work. This is why it's funny. Get everybody on board and kind of explain to them or work with them to determine the best way to have it shot and the best way to have it edited and execute it.
So it's very much a management role, overseeing the entire kind of production and making sure things come together and are delivered in the way you envisage it, right?
It is, yeah. And on a small team, even in director's capacity, you wear a lot of hats. All of us did a lot of editing. I did a lot of editing myself. I have a background in motion graphics work, so a lot of the motion graphics, actually, I think most, if not all, the motion graphic work for Ultra I handled as well. The team, like I mentioned, they would not just edit. They'd edit, have a camera in their hands. We'd be at events, scheduling interviews. And it was a really, really pleasant experience to work with those guys.
And so you say you have a background in comedy. How the hell do you go from comedy to esports? I mean, a lot of the things that happen in esports is funny because it's just so ludicrous. But like, there's not really huge overlap in those industries from my knowledge. So how the hell does that happen?
I mean, it's been a long time since I've done stand up, but the long and short of it is, I've always done comedy videos. Like back in college, my friends and I went to film school with, you have nobody else to would act in them, we'd perform in them, we'd write the jokes, we'd shoot them, we'd edit them. And eventually that just kind of led to, what are all the things that you can do to get noticed as an entertainer, as a performer? And one of those things is stand-up comedy. And I started doing it, kind of fell in love with it. Wasn't great at it, so I stopped. But eventually, I continued making videos, and I always kind of had, a taste for the more comedic side of things. And eventually somebody was looking for a funnier take on something that was traditionally very kind of arm crossy, tough guy kind of stuff. And that happened to be esports at the time. And they called me up and it was a good fit.
So I don't want to bring it up, but we have to, like, so because of the whole coronavirus thing, I'm assuming that is the reasoning for it, that everything I've heard suggests it is. Overactive Media, which is the parent company of Defiant and Ultra, as well as Mad Lions, and there's a couple of others I can't remember probably at this point, as they've expanded a lot in a very short amount of time. And yeah. I think that married with the kind of climate of the economy at the moment, it's not great. They've had to scale back, which I think happened before as well, maybe like a year ago or so. I think there were quite a few people let go then, and unfortunately you were one of the people there. I think it was reported by Esports Observer either earlier this week or, well, no, it's Monday, so last week, that 13 people were gone, and I saw someone else announced today. I don't know if that's just a delayed response to what happened last week or whenever it was made known to you all. But it's I don't know. It's shit because, well, I've put out tweets myself without really knowing anyone at Ultra specifically. I know like Paolo, for example, and Chris, I've spoken to them before. I tweeted that Toronto Ultra had the best brand in the CDL because it was actually making itself stand out. Not just the squirrel logo or anything like that, but like actually everything it was doing to like supplement just the brand, like the whole approach was incredible. And it was very much the exact opposite of how Call of Duty has been. And I've been a part of that community for like 12 years, so I've seen it. No one's really tried to do this really lighthearted, take the piss, kind of like very aware of what's going on, break the fourth wall almost. It kind of felt a little bit Deadpool-y to me in that sense, where it is very aware of what's going on and very meta and stuff. And yeah, obviously that's, I don't know how they'll move on from that, but so was that your first esports project? 'Cause, I mean, you absolutely fucking smashed it, if so, well, either way, but.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the kind words about our content and the work. It was, as a matter of fact, it was my introduction to esports, and it was a little bit nerve wracking, to be honest, simply because I've been part of small communities before in my history, especially like small protective communities. Back before even the X Games were a big thing, and I'm showing my age here. I was really into the snowboarding community. I lived out west for a little while in the Rocky Mountains in Canada. And it was always this cool thing that felt like, you know, it was just ours, but right around the corner, you know, some suits are going to come in and take it over. And you want to be protective of it. And you want to, you want to keep what the fans built.
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah. And I was really aware coming into esports that was a kind of prevalent attitude in the community, which I 100% respect and support. As you can tell, I'm not a suit coming in to try and steal esports away. But you always have that kind of thing in the back of your mind, like, oh my God, are people going to hate this because I'm, a casual? Or, you know, are they just going to dismiss everything we do entirely? But me and the team, we all became fans really quick. We had Dan Carranza on our team, who's absolutely fantastic. He's very COD endemic. He taught us so much about the league and the history and the sport, and we were able to use that to kind of be a little bit more organic in our work. But it was my first foray into esports. I believe it was Nick and Mike's as well. I don't think I think Dan was the only one who had done kind of esports content creation, but we were really, really happy with the way the community was so welcoming to us and accepted the work.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it was just such like the antithesis of what we'd seen before. And actually, when I interviewed Chris before we'd really seen anything from Toronto Ultra, I think it was a couple of days before the brand was to be announced and such, and I got to see the video, and I was like, at first it kind of, I wasn't sure about it because it was so different from what I was used to. It was like a shock to the system almost. I was like, this is going to be really cheesy. But the way it was done, as you say, like having the COD knowledge there from a colleague and such, it didn't feel like you were just taking the piss or anything like that. You were very much part of it. You were just so aware that you could turn it on its head. And yeah, it was great. And do you see Ultra being the last time you work in esports now, or have we won you over?
Oh, I think esports has definitely won me over.
Why would you say that is then?
I had way too much fun getting into being at the live events, getting into supporting the team, you know, following every, like, I very, very quickly became addicted to COD League and to, you know, watching streams, watching all the league matches and everything else. Like, even when I think it was the last event, the events in LA, mm-hmm. Ultra actually wasn't there. And I found myself just sitting through and watching the entire event just as a fan of not just Ultra, not just the team that, you know, I was working to support, but just as a fan of the league and of the game. And I just really enjoyed it. And everyone's been so awesome and welcoming. And I think I'll definitely continue to try and pursue something in esports creating content.
Good. Well, you say about being welcoming, like what I found with esports is if you come in with like the right attitude and the right approach and show that you're trying to not take over but be part and kind of integrate yourself in, then you get a really warm welcome, as opposed to, as you say, being a suit and showing that you don't actually care about what's going on. You're just in it to try and make money. And if you're doing that, you're in the wrong space anyway, because I mean, esports isn't the best place for that at the moment. Like we've already seen with like Team Reciprocity, they've gone bankrupt and had to downscale entirely, Overactive Media having to downscale, and then Ghost Gaming, I can finally say it, is trying to sell, but that's not too likely at this point. I believe it's kind of on the fringe of happening, but also definitely couldn't, and their organization's trying to merge with others. Like it's a very tricky time now, when you see people come in and they obviously don't give a fuck, like those are the people that tend to get the most shit, because it's almost tribal in a sense. And obviously as the individual communities for the games, but when esports is still small enough to where we band everything together, like you never really see a sports fan. It's always like fan of basketball or baseball or football or something. But like there's a lot of esports fans as opposed to, oh, I own exclusively like COD or League or CSGO. You know, it's we all band together in that sense.
Yeah, and it's a really, really, I think that's a very unique, that's something that's very unique, of course, to esports, but I think that's also, for the fans, just gives you more to watch, more to pay attention to, more to root for, and that feeling of community just kind of becomes larger, I think, with that.
And that's a nightmare for people like me who have to cover everything that's fucking going on. I tell you, it's wild, and especially from the industry standpoint, because you have to cover, you have to like know everything about the people behind the scenes, and that's actually, it's helpful in knowing who the good people are and who the bad actors are, really. And I said this to you before we was recording this, that I really like helping out people who are obviously good and have proven themselves to have the right intentions and such, whereas I will always be a twat to the people I can just tell are twats themselves, you know. So you say you'd stick in esports if necessary. Would you be looking for the exact same role, or like obviously it's, well, I say obviously, it seems like you kind of excel in a lot of different areas, but is content the place for you?
I think content is the place for me. I mean, even if I was to work in a higher level role, like a creative director role or something like that, I would want it to be specific to video content creation. specifically, simply because there's so much opportunity within the esports world to branch out and create new forms of video content, new types of video storytelling that hasn't really been touched on yet within the community. Because like anything based online, the reality is, or anything that has kind of come up and gained more popularity, specifically in the online space, the reality of that situation is you end up with a lot of repetitiveness simply by nature. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's just part of the world of marketing. There's always this game between creative and numbers.
Yeah.
And because a lot of people will start to focus more on the numbers side of things, what ends up happening is you become risk averse and you kind of look at things from the sense of, well, this has been successful, this thing that somebody else did.
Yeah.
So why don't we do that? And then we can be successful too, which can earn you some short-term success. But the problem is it isn't sustainable because you haven't created a brand or a voice of your own at that point.
Yeah.
You're just repeating things other people have done. So, you know, esports has some really great opportunities to create some very, very unique and distinct voices through content. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there. That's another reason why I'd love to stay and stick around in esports. It's still growing. It's a great community. And there's just so much opportunity to do some original shit, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So how do I go about getting you to become the creative director of Adam Fitch Enterprises with all of my podcasts and such? How the hell do I make that happen? Because... yeah, I have no doubt that you do a better job than me.
I think you're doing a pretty great job, man. You're all over the esports space. I see your name popping up all the time.
Yeah, but, which is bad for the people who dislike me, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Well, maybe if you ever need a – you helped me out already, so if you ever need a promo video or something, you give me a shout. We'll work something out.
Jesus Christ, I'm not ready for that level yet. I'm not at that level. But so if you could cherry pick – one area of esports, whether it be a title or a particular league or a company, to go in and you get creative reign over the content and the voice of it and such, what would you pick?
Oh man, that's a tough question.
Good. I have to chuck a couple in there, throw you off a bit.
Yeah, it's so tough to say because you've got, when you think about content, you're not just relegated to the teams or any particular mm-hmm. league itself. It would be great to work for a league. Like, it'd be awesome to work like specifically for you know, COD League or
it needs you. I'll tell you that much. Jesus, it's dry. In my opinion.
I haven't seen a ton of you know, the CDL specific content mm-hmm. that's come out, but you know, everyone can always use some more flavor, I guess. But man, it's hard to say. I can tell you who I think is doing an absolutely killer job.
Can I guess first? Is it a team?
It is a team.
Are there 100 of them in the name?
100 of them in their name?
Is it 100 Thieves? I'm assuming it's 100 Thieves. If not, I'm surprised.
Oh, it's not, actually.
Oh, shit. Okay, that's just the organization everyone's loving at the moment, you know, so I just assumed.
I do love 100 Thieves. I'm still exploring the wider esports world outside of COD, because you know I've only been involved in.
There's too much going on, mate. Yeah.
But I'll tell you who's nailing it. And I always see their content, and I think they're doing such a great job. Is Minnesota Rocker?
Okay.
I feel like their voice. They have a very, very unified voice across all platforms, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got your social media, which is going to handle all your tweets and your memes and the copy of the tweets and everything else rolling out. But then their video content and their attitude throughout the brand, it all feels like it's like the same person almost. And that's a lot to manage, to get that kind of brand voice that tight. But kudos to them because they are really crushing it.
I guess it helps having like Midnight, who former content creator for Optic, and then having Gary Vee as well, you know. I assume two people who know content being on board from the get-go kind of helps. Because yeah, you've seen
totally.
You've seen some franchises definitely not put that much thought into things. I actually thought the league was massively rushed. Everything I heard behind the scenes suggested it was massively rushed as well. So it just seemed like there wasn't much chance for franchises to really get shit nailed down prior to launching their brand and stuff, you know. And I think that's become evident. And while I think Mutineers has a decent brand, I haven't really seen too much there that I think, okay, that's impressive. As I say, it's literally been ultra. I put Rocker there because they started with the podcasts early, giving an insight into what the hell was going on there before anything was even launched, and showing off their HQ and stuff. You just kind of felt more, not intimate, but like you felt like you had the inside scoop a bit more with them from the get-go. So yeah, there was less of a facade or kind of barrier to them. And I think that's about it. Sublinus is doing some okay stuff, not really on the content side, but like they're doing creator-driven drops and such, so that's kind of cool.
I love their motion graphics work too, is just awesome. Like their design is next level. I love the Subliners design.
Well, yeah, well, like everyone was going mental about the name Subliners and their actual logo and such, because I remember I actually leaked it before anything was out there, and everyone thought I was bullshitting and saying it was awful, but I was always quite keen on it.
It's smart design in that it's eye-catching, and if you think about, and this is just the motion graphics nerd in me, but if you think about the breakdown of it in two simple colors and the way it's laid out, there's so many different ways to make that move, make mm-hmm. it transition into something else. And they've done that. Like all their videos include motion graphics that are based specifically on those core components of the logo. And I think that's really, really smart.
I think they had that with NYXL and Box did before they launched Subliners, so they had the same agency behind both. So it does make sense that they've kind of gone for the geometrical kind of, yeah, it does make sense. Rather than like Royal Ravens, for example, like some of the stuff they've done, I know the social media guy there and I respect a few of the people behind the scenes, but I'm not a fan of either the name or the logo there. Because at one point it was supposed to be just London Ravens, because I found the I found the trademark for that and leaked that. And then I found the trademark for London Royal Ravens and I was like, can they even use Royal? Because I swear you need like approval from whatever it is in the UK, because we're stupid and have a queen and a royal family and such, but they're just kind of gone.
Oh, shit, I didn't know that. You need approval to use...
like royal in there. There's some weird stipulation there, which I assume they'd gone through, but I've never heard anything about it. And they're still operating, so seemingly they're okay. But yeah, I'm not a fan of the brand there, even though I'm a UK boy myself, obviously, so I've got to support them a bit.
I love their social media guy. I think he's hilarious.
Peter.
Yeah.
Very Irish, but very lovely guy.
Yeah, and he's funny. That's half the battle, right? Mm-hmm. Is like getting these guys, the social media guys, have to throw tweets out all day, and they've got to be on point and fun and funny, and that's easy to fuck up.
I would fuck that up without a doubt.
Oh, so 100%.
And that's why we're seeing people, not necessarily in the CDL, but they just, I tweeted about this the other day, and had quite a few people behind the scenes messaging me saying yes, this, but they'd never say it publicly for some reason. Like people going on Reddit and just going in the COD Reddit or whatever it may be, and like nicking memes and little clips and such, and then uploading those. It's just like, that is not a viable social media strategy at all. Like, it's not unique to you. That's what I would have to do, because I just can't sit there and just come up with like snappy, entertaining, insightful, engaging like 280 character like tweets every time. There's no way I could do it.
Yeah, man, it's a tough gig. I remember in the early days of social media, this is me showing my age again, the first time I worked with somebody who was hired specifically to manage social media accounts, Facebook and Twitter accounts, mm-hmm. I remember thinking, this is a job? That's crazy. And now I can't imagine a brand without them. Like it's such an important job, and it's really difficult.
No, that's true. I mean, like, I don't know. It's crazy even thinking that esports is a thing, in a sense, like where you think, well, I think back to when I was a kid, I was playing like Spider-Man 1 on the PS1, or like Hercules, or like Rayman M. Like how has that gone to what it is now, where there's like $30 million prize pools for the international, the Dota 2 event, for example? It's It's absolutely fucking wild, mate. And
yeah, man. It's madness.
And that's why I'm trying to protect it, because there are people who will come through and fuck things up if we let them, you know. And I think we're seeing more and more of it, but thankfully there are a few vocal people out there who are speaking up against them. It's wild, and I don't know. I never thought I'd be fucking working in an industry that's competitive video games when I used to like just play games all the time when I was young. Like the fact that it's even at the point where it can employ people, it is insane to me.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, man. And it's going to be interesting to see how it grows, because there's still a long way for esports to grow, and I really do think it's only going to get bigger. With how quickly I saw myself become a fan, I can't imagine tons of other people not having that exact same experience, where it's like the minute you're really exposed to it and you really have a chance to get into it, it's very easy to become a fan.
What would you say specifically about like Call of Duty that kind of hooked you in a sense? Because I played it since 2008, and I think I've been around it to the point where I hate it now, and I want the best for the league, but everything it just pisses me off. So it may seem like I hate it, but I do love it, really. But like I'm wondering, from like someone, as you say, you discovered it quite recently yourself, what is it about Call of Duty that hooked you?
Well, I mean, part of it admittedly is just luck of the draw. Right. I mean, I worked creating content for a Call of Duty league or league team specifically. Mm-hmm. So my first experience going out to a live event and seeing the game played on the large screen, I'll let you in on a secret. Prior to the first event, like I couldn't even I tried watching matches online. Mm-hmm. I tried watching VODs, and I just couldn't. It was overwhelming. I just didn't get it. I didn't understand what I was looking at half the time. Although I had played, I had played the game. I didn't understand how the score was being kept, anything like that.
Yeah.
The first event in Minnesota, being there with the crowd and seeing these players who I'd gotten to know through a couple of video shoots up there on stage under the lights in front of everybody, hearing people cheer and boo and everything else, and just seeing how massive the live event was, that's what got me hooked initially on COD, was just being there and seeing it live. And that's an interesting question, because it makes me wonder now whether that would have ever happened to me had I not been working in esports. Mm-hmm. Like, would I ever have bought tickets to go see an esports event live? Like, maybe if a friend really encouraged me to do it or told me it was fun. But long story short, anybody listening, get out there and bring your friends who aren't esports fans to live events when we're allowed to have live events again. That's what got me hooked. I've watched Overwatch League matches a couple of times.
I feel sorry for you.
I still haven't played the game. I just find it super, like, I guess intimidating is the wrong word, but I just don't understand what I'm watching. This is me being old again.
No, I'm right there with you. I've played it before, and I'm not super old. I feel like I am sometimes, but I'm not super old. And I watch it, and I'm just like, what the fuck is going on here? I think part of it is just like it's a hard game for spectators and observers to really break down and stuff. And then even though the casters can do a good job of it, they're sometimes casting so fast and they know what to look for, but I don't. So I'm like, what the fuck's the point? I'll just go to a CSGO or something where it's really methodical and you can kind of follow what's happening, you know? So I've never got into Overwatch like that at all.
I'd really I want to start watching CSGO. I think I'm.
You should. If you like COD, like CSGO is basically like the enlightened man's COD.
Oh.
It's search and destroy. It's search and destroy. It's 5v5. But it's actually got strategy and tactics to it. Whereas COD is almost just run and gun, like, oh, we're better than you in that sense and we can rotate, right? That's fine. But like CSGO, because of there's a whole economy aspect to it, and if you win around, you get more money. Like, I'm a COD guy, but CSGO is, I can't say there's a better esport out there. And it is basically search and destroy on drugs with brains.
That's amazing. All right, cool. I'm going to check it out.
I would recommend that. And I mean, there's two leagues going on right now. as the edgy league, obviously, Flashpoint, where Thorin is just going to war with everyone. I maybe won't watch that to begin with. ESL, I think, a bit more friendly to get into instantly. Though, don't tell anyone that. Hopefully no one here clips that or anything, because I'll get called biased and my career will be ruined and people will hate me.
That's a lot of pressure, man.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, you should watch that. I need to watch more events. I was tweeting that the other day. Like, I think I've been on Twitch maybe 6 times in the past year because I spend too much time trying to stay on top of what's going on. I can't just sit back and watch what's going on because there's too many things to do. It's like esports content creation, for the most part, isn't at the point where you can just have your own beat unless you're like huge. Like, it'd be hard for me now to just cover COD, for example, like, because the viewership isn't there. So I have to, you have to really cover everything just to kind of scrape through. And that seems to be the case. Unless you're Richard Lewis or Thorin or like Travis Gafford or something for League of Legends, then yeah, you good luck like finding a beat and sticking to it and getting like high viewership. It's absolutely fucked. I'll be honest with you, it's intimidating as well.
It's a lot that you've got to pay attention to. It's wild.
Yeah, the thing is, I didn't realize when. So I had followed esports and played a bit, but I actually got into working it in January 2018, and I went straight to esports insider, so the business side. I had no business experience in terms of understanding business, nor any esports besides Halo or COD. I think, in a tiny bit of CSGO. So, like, that was, like, the most rude awakening of all time, like, figuring out what the fuck's going on. I wish I almost had, like, what you had, where it's just like, okay, I'm concentrating on Call of Duty, it's this team, it's one thing, there's enough to learn there, never mind everything going on, you know? But, so, I want to talk about Ultra a little bit more, like, some of the projects you did and the videos you put out and such. So, like, were you in total charge of that, or was it, like, a collaborative effort where everyone had their says and such? I know you said you had your on-hand Call of Duty expert to inform you and such, but like, was it mainly your brainchildren, these projects and videos?
I mean, that's tough to say. Some of them were. In a lot of cases, I would write a script for an Ultra video piece, and I would come into the studio, or I would send it to the guys and run it by them and say, okay, here's what we're going to do for the hype video for Ultra going into London, or here's what we're going to do for the hype video for Ultra going into Atlanta. But those things evolve just like anything else. And I think that's another part of being, if you want to be a good director, you know, you've got to listen to ideas from other people around you and be collaborative as well, right? Mm-hmm. So everyone would contribute some jokes, or we would grow off of some of the jokes, and then it became what it was all the way throughout the filming process, right?
Right.
Even little things, like we did that, we did a hype video for LA, even though we weren't going to LA, and created this Ultra Canadian taco. It was like a waffle with bacon in it that was, you know, folded over. And the guys, as we were shooting that, were like, oh, what if we put this in it? What if we put that in it? Here's another ingredient. And it just, you know, it becomes this thing out of a collaborative effort. We did have oversight. We were overseen by Paulo mm-hmm. Senra, who I think you'd mentioned you've met before. Great guy. Super, super positive, you know, really great to work with. He oversaw the PR department and the content department. But as far as creative ideation was concerned, free rein was pretty well given to creative direct to myself and Karen Culleton, who is the producer for Toronto Defiant. Also, she's very, very talented too. And she was wonderful to work with as well. But yeah, we'd come up with an idea and say, hey guys, let's shoot this. And we'd shoot it.
Well, what's the obsession with being north and being northern? I think that was a thing going backwards and forwards, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that came from, wow, that was way back when.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that started right when the like teams were outside the locations.
Yeah. That was actually, that was a brainchild of our marketing team. I remember the first meeting that I sat on in on when they were first kind of going over the branding with me. They had mentioned that something about Minnesota, they had heard Minnesota was going to do something about the North or calling themselves the North. So there's some talk and some chat about, you know, the North tagline from the Toronto Raptors and just kind of playing with that idea and seeing if a rivalry could be created with Minnesota. And then by the time we got to Minnesota, that little rivalry was full swing, and there's such good sports about that kind of shit. And they're also really funny too. Like I think the Rocker team is really clever and does some really funny stuff as well. So we were just able to have a lot of fun with it.
Did you go look at traditional sports a lot to get cues and such, or were you just kind of coming up with just whatever came to mind that you thought was good, you'd run with that? Or would you specifically look at sports and go, okay, we need to copy that? Because some people do that and it don't really work out well a lot of the time.
Yeah, I'll be honest, the only time I looked at sports or other works to emulate things is if we were going to make fun of them. Like if we were going to take it and satirize it, then I'd, you know, do some research and say, okay, well, what are other teams doing, or, you know, what are they doing for this or this or this that is recognizable enough to people that if we made fun of it, they would get it. Like they would catch on to the gag. Right. Otherwise, it would just, you wake up in the morning and think to yourself, holy shit, this would be hilarious. And then you just do it.
Fuck, I wish I had that. Because, I mean, I have to be somewhat creative, I guess, to come up with feature ideas and such. But, like, I'm very much a numbers guy for the most part. And it's hard for me to turn on my creative brain and such. Do you ever face like creative blocks and such? Like obviously we get like writer's block and such. Like does that ever come to you really? And how do you overcome it, if so?
I do all the time, and it's tough. Like because I get like I'll straight up get a panic attack.
Oh right, shit.
Because the job is it's a lot of pressure. Hmm. I mean, it's less pressure now because the pressure used to be, oh shit, if I don't do this, I'm going to lose my job. And now it's a lot less pressure to be creative. So I can just kind of sit at home and make stupid, funny videos.
I want to speak about those.
but yeah, when I get a creative block, it's tough. But usually it's just overcoming it is just a matter of like continuing to plug away. Like, you know, have your little freak out, realize you're not shit. You're actually pretty good and people have told you as much, and just don't worry and you'll come up with something. And as soon as your brain is in that space, usually it's an idea will pop in and you'll just say, fuck it, let's roll with it. How can we make this funnier?
I get you. Cause what I tend to do is if I really need to get a 2000 word feature done. Now I'm the editor, so I dictate what I do. So I never do that anymore. But when I had to before, it would be a case of, oh shit, I don't know what I'm doing. So I try and break it down into the very basics of what I need to do. But that's the difference between like having a, I guess, predetermined outcome. Whereas with a really creative thing, like you have to come up with the idea instead of the idea already being there. So I would be absolutely fucked if I had a creative block as such and I was in your type of role. But so I need to go into quarantine stuff a little bit. First off, I just want to say to everyone watching and listening, I hope you're staying safe and not being stupid bastards, going to beaches and hanging around with friends and going to see your grandparents and shit. Like, I hope everyone's actually being sensible, because especially in the UK, I assume it's the same everywhere because there's stupid people everywhere. We've got people who are still fucking about, who act like this is not a big deal. But people are dying, and the longer the stupid people be stupid, the longer we're all trapped in. So I just want to encourage everyone to stay inside and wish everyone the best. Now, I work from home, and I have done for 2 years, so things haven't really changed for me. I'm going on a daily walk, but apart from that, I'm sat at a desk with a bad back at 25 years old, wondering why I'm doing this to myself. But you've been still creating. I've seen a couple of videos. Have you done 2 episodes of this series so far?
Yeah, I've done 2 so far, comic books and rap music.
And why did you decide to do this? And what is it for the people who haven't seen yet? I enjoy them personally, but...
Thanks. So yeah, I started creating these videos where I basically pretend that I'm, having to do community service, which is typically going out to the park or going out in the community, cleaning up garbage or doing whatever. But because we're all locked indoors, I have to do community service from my house. So in the first one, I read a comic book to the viewers, and I just describe the art to them
Was it
without
Watchmen?
showing. It was Watchmen,
Very
yeah.
good, very good choice.
It was Watchmen. Yeah, I love that book. But I could only get through the first page because I spent so much time explaining what the artwork looked like. And in the most recent one, I teach old people about rap music by using one of my favorite rap groups, Run the Jewels. And they actually, both of them, they liked it and retweeted it yesterday, which just
There you go.
blew my mind. I was so excited about that. But the short answer to the reason I'm doing it is because I'm bored. And if I don't, I'll go nuts.
What else are you doing then besides the video stuff and social media, I assume?
The video stuff and looking for work. And also because I work in video and in creative, it never hurts to have additional stuff that you're putting out to try and stay relevant.
I agree.
But yeah, I've been out hitting the pavement trying to find work for and not just myself, but me and the whole team. Because like I said, I mean those guys are so talented. And I know not everybody has opportunities for for senior creative roles. Like they might not need somebody like me in that kind of role, but they might need an editor, or they might need a really great videographer, cinematographer, and I want to be able to point them in the right direction. But yeah, thankfully that unemployment hype video that we did got a lot of views and a lot of love and support from you as well, Adam. Thanks so much
Of course.
for supporting us on that. And yeah, we've been able to have some good conversations with people because of that. So it's promising.
Yeah, I saw the other day that the Call of Duty community came out and showed a bit of appreciation, which I thought was the least they could do, and kind of have shared and signal boosted a bit, if you want to call it that. I hate that phrase so much. I can't believe I'm turning into one of those people. Oh, fuck. I've just caught myself doing that. Shit. Next,
It's infectious.
I'll be saying like
You
synergy and high level and shit soon that I don't even really understand. But no, I think the appreciation, obviously you were getting decent responses when you were putting out the videos and such, but the real appreciation has come afterwards. It is, from what I've seen at least, where people are actually going out of their way and shouting you all out and bigging you all up, which I thought is necessary. And if I could have everybody on the podcast, I would. There's definitely no way I could do that. And also, there's not too many people who watch this, so I don't know the level of people who are watching. But you said maybe not everyone needs like a senior creative person in their organization. I disagree with that. I think everyone, all the organizations and teams and leagues would benefit from having people in those places, because
Oh yeah,
content is
sorry.
so important.
Absolutely, I agree. And sorry, I should rephrase that. I simply mean that there might not be people in need of senior creatives right now because they may
Okay.
already have them.
Right.
But I'm just keeping my ears open for the rest of that team as well, the rest of the team, because you may already have a creative director, but you might need an editor.
Okay,
And
yeah.
if you do, you should reach out to Nick Houghton or Mike Onley or Daniel Carranza because they are multi-talented and absolutely fantastic.
No, I agree. From what I've seen, I can testify to that. Like, how would you say content is as important, or yeah, of equal importance to like getting results? Say, for example, we'll stick to what we know with like CDL, for example. Is it more
Yeah.
important to have the best content team or the best like actual playing team, or is that a false equivalent?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I think it depends on the answer you're looking for from your brand.
Yeah.
But if I'm being honest, in the first year, this is the league's first the new CDL league's first year,
Yep.
right? The expansions. I think content is massively, massively important.
I agree.
Because the reality is you are defining and creating what that brand voice is going to look like for the foreseeable future for the fans. So you could have a team that's not performing well. If people like you as a brand, then next year or the year after or the year after, you know, when things change as they do with, you know, from year to year with all the players, some get better, some don't play, you know, the newest release quite as well, whatever it is. But eventually the staying power of your brand is going to be that voice that you've created for it.
Without a doubt.
So,
and COD's always had a problem where COD Optic Gaming was so dominant for so long and was the brand. Like, you've seen now, like, a lot of the supporters and such just go where Scump and Formal are at Huntsman, and obviously Hex is there as well with Embos and such, and TST, who were at Optic before. Well, Hitch was, like, apart from that, like, there's not been a huge amount of brand loyalty outside of mainly Optic, a little bit of FaZe, a tiny bit of Envy, a tiny bit of United. It's always been very top-heavy in that respect, and I think the CDL was a fresh start and a good way for teams that have never had kind of their fair share, or that perhaps the share they thought they deserved, to actually go out there and earn it and take it back from Huntsman. And I mean, I think it's been redistributed quite a bit. Obviously, Huntsman is, well, I say obviously, I think Huntsman appears to be the most popular still. I mean, it's been in like the top 10 most mentioned esports teams of the entire month on Twitter, for example. I think it was the only CDL franchise. And that's just the power of having those people involved, you know. But like Ultra, for example, and Rock has done a good job, and New York's doing okay. Like, they've kind of redistributed it a little bit, and that's what the league needs, I think. Instead of just one team dominating in following and such, like, all teams have their own like strong fan bases, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, teams need to like organizations need to understand too that sort of thing is going to take some time. Mm-hmm. You're not going to come out of the gate and as esports is still growing, you're not going to come out of the gate in the first year and just completely dominate the conversation and take, you know, all those fans away from the people that they've been loyal to for a long time. But, you know, if you stick with it and you believe in what you're creating, you believe in the brand, then you'll see some results.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's been one example of that actually happening. And even then, it's not been to the drastic scale where we're thinking. I mean, it's 100 Thieves. We mentioned them earlier. And that's because Nadeshot was Optic Nadeshot. Again, it's that Optic power. Obviously, it's very different now with Optic LA at IGC, Immortals Gaming Club. Yeah, but it's... Yeah, he came in and the moves he made initially. I mean, having Drake invest in your company doesn't hurt by any means. But yeah, they've heavily prioritized content alongside, like, content and entertainment is a huge part of it. Obviously with apparel and esports as well. But I mean, you could say the most been successful in apparel and then content and then the gaming after that, actually. I don't know if they've been super original anyway, right? In content, it's not like the groundbreaking in a sense. They're just doing things very well by the looks of things.
They're doing great work from what I've seen of the stuff that they've created. They're doing great work, but more to your point, they're diversifying, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to hit on all cylinders, and they're actually taking the time and the effort to do it right, and I think that's extremely important. You can also tell that they're organized too.
Oh, without a doubt. And also, they've been doing quite a bit of acting, like sketches almost in their content. Yeah. I'm going to call that the Kevin effect. I don't know if they were doing that before Ultra, really. But no.
A big part of that, and even people ask me all the time why I decided to do the voiceover for the Ultra videos. And it's like, you know, not to cheapen it or anything, but a big part of why I did the voiceover and a big part of why we chose to put ourselves in some of the videos is just resourcefulness. Like I mentioned earlier, I started making videos with friends from college in our apartment. You learn really quickly how to just use the tools that you do have available to you instead of bitching about the stuff that you don't have to make something. So what do we have? We've got a handful of guys in a cool studio with nothing to shoot this week because we don't have access to the players. Well, let's make up a video about who are the Chicago Huntsmen and shoot that, right?
Yeah.
Well, we don't have time to go down to hire a professional voice actor and book time in the recording studio. So why don't I just write the script and record my own voice, and we'll do it that way. So a lot of that comes just from resourcefulness. And I would think that 100 Thieves are probably thinking the same way on that front.
Yeah. And it helps their facility, what they've built and all of the funds they've got kind of helps as well. They are being resourceful. They just happen to have a shit ton of resources.
Yes. Yeah.
I'll tell you, one thing will be interesting though, is how Ultra continues from now. And it's obviously unfortunate. I know that they can't have wanted to do what's happened there. But it'll be really interesting to see how they move forward. Now, I know they did a video with Methods just before recording this, and he's a personality, so it's kind of cool. But they're not going to be able to replicate what was produced, I don't think, and they shouldn't aim to replicate it anyway, I don't think. I'm just interested to see if there'll be a huge step backwards now, or what will happen, you know.
I'm still going to support anything that they release. I obviously, I saw friends who work there and who are very creative and want to create some great work. So, I hope that they can start putting some stuff out that really hits the mark and keeps fans engaged for sure.
Right. Yeah. I would love to sit and talk all night, but that is not viable for anyone, and nobody will listen to me talking all night. And I will not subject you to that. So we're getting towards the hour mark. It's gone fast. There's plenty more I wish I could talk about, but perhaps a part two down the line. Who knows? We'll see how that goes. How can people find you? How can people get in touch? Sell yourself. It's your time. This is Dragon's Den type dealio now.
Yeah, cool. So, well, first, thanks for having me. And my pleasure. As I mentioned before, thank you so much for the kind words and support for me and the former Toronto Ultra content team. If anyone wants to reach out at all, if you dig our work, even if you just want to say thanks, you can find us on Twitter. My Twitter is KevinBurke32. And my pinned post actually has Mike and Daniel's Twitter accounts linked to it as well. So you can check us out there for the time being. Also, if you're hiring, feel free to look us up on LinkedIn. Kevin Burke, Daniel Carranza, Mike Onley, and Nick Houghton. Some really talented guys. I'm gonna miss working with them for the time being. I'm hoping we get to work together again.
Fingers crossed. I would love to see that. I'll put that out there. I'd love to see what you could do for another brand, for example. That would be fucking insane, I reckon. But I just want to say again, best of luck to you. If there's anything I can do, then reach out. You know that. Thank you for your time, for coming on and for entertaining a conversation with me. I'm not in my best form. I am absolutely dead to the world at the moment. But heyo, we made it happen. And yeah, just best of luck, man. I know something will come through soon, and you'll kill whatever it is. No doubt about it.
Thanks so much, Adam. Thanks for having me, man. It was a good chat.
No worries. Right, anyone who's watched or listened, thank you for tuning in. As I say, I don't know what episode it is. You'll know because it'll be on your screen. You can subscribe if you want or like if you want. You also don't have to. I don't really care too much. But either way, thank you for your time. Especially if you made it this far listening to me ramble on. I appreciate that. And I'll catch you on the next episode of the Adam Fitch Podcast. Cheers.